right. Well, here we are. To dream again. To dare again. To feel enjoyment and happiness again. Or for the first time. To realize this is living. Be inspired. To see your life as an exciting journey of discovery. With your host of the Inspire Possibility Show, Mark Sussman.
Hi, everybody. This is Mark Sussnell. Thanks for tuning in to the Inspire Possibility Show, the show that will inspire you to do things that perhaps you ordinarily wouldn't do. Perhaps you felt that they're beyond you, you've missed the boat. Whatever it is, it's time to kind of get renewed. And every week, with that in mind, I invite people that hopefully will inspire us to go in that direction, to be bolder. And sometimes there are people that I meet in my life. Sometimes I get emails from colleagues and publicists. And so I have somebody special today. He is Philip Shepherd. He's the author of Radical Wholeness. He's a celebrated and international authority on embodiment. He travels the world teaching the embodied present process, which is a unique set of practices he developed for reuniting the anxious, restless pace of the intelligence in the head with a deep, present, and connected intelligence of the body. Now, you're probably wondering what that means. So rather than me try to explain it, I'm going to let Philip explain it. And Philip, welcome to the Inspire Possibility Show.
Thanks, Mark. It's a pleasure to be here with you. Do you want me to try to put some flesh on those bones?
Yeah, be great.
It's one of these things I realized early on that we sort of live in our heads and we take that to be the completely normal way a human being is, because that's where the brain is, and we're missing what people are coming round to bit by bit, that there is this intelligence in the body that's connected to the world. And, you know, mm-hmm. to come out of the head and join that intelligence sort of shifts everything around for the better.
Mm-hmm. So are you saying to combine the mind-body spirit kind of, that kind of what you're in that realm, would you say? Mind-body
yeah.
spirit?
Yeah, it is for sure. And even mind-body, the term is one that creates an artificial divide between the mind
uh-huh.
and the body. Because, I mean, whatever your body's energy is up to, your mind is in the same state. You know, if your body's energy is agitated, your mind is agitated.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. If your body's energy is at peace, you know, say you have a massage and it's a great one and your body
right.
just comes to rest, your mind comes to rest. So even that divide between them is one that we've sort of artificially created. Whatever happens in the body is part of the mind. It's just that,
uh-huh.
you know, we've got this choice to desensitize ourselves to what's happening in the body, and that's kind of what's happened. And we've, you know, so we feel disconnected and we feel anxious and we don't know why, and we're trying to bring our minds to rest without including the body. And it's so much easier when
mm-hmm.
you do.
So the kind of work you do, it's for people to learn to listen to their body more, because we do listen to our mind, especially with those negative messages we get about I can't do it, I'm not good enough. So what you're encouraging people is to also listen to the body, right? What the body tells us.
It's actually, you know, it's one step beyond that in a way, because, you know, that idea of listening to the body, which is a really useful thing to explore, but it's still about sitting in the head, noticing what's happening in the body.
Uh-huh.
And what my work is about is different. It's actually about allowing the center of your awareness to drop down into the body and come to rest there. And then instead of listening to the body, you're actually listening to the world through the body. And it's a very different experience.
Uh-huh.
It really counteracts, you know, we're such a self-obsessed culture where we think about our own thoughts rather than noticing the world around us. We are after self-development and self-achievement. And again, I've got nothing against that, but if you take your attention and you so relentlessly focus it on the self, you're sort of throwing the world around you into shadow, and you lose that exchange with the present that is always happening. It's just, you know, you dull yourself to it and you forget it's there.
So is it the process you teach, the embodiment process, is it about learning to be more in the moment? Would that be accurate?
It really is, and it's about encountering all these little habits that show up in the body that are, in effect, put there by our culture, you know, to
give
live in this culture.
Yeah. Philip, can you give me an example of, you say, these little habits?
Oh, yeah, totally. If you're aware of your breath, for example, you know that it's, you know, a deep breath is important, but our culture is so top-down that we've turned breathing into a top-down exercise. So you try to take a deep breath, and you push the breath as far as you can into the body, and that takes muscle, and the muscles get tired, and the breath goes shallow again. And it's such a different thing, you know, to go deep, deep into the belly and learn how to release the belly to the breath. And then the breath, you know, is filling the body from the bottom up rather than the top down. And that's just, you know, that's just one example. So, you know, I as you mentioned, I teach workshops around the world, and we look at breath. We look at, you know, we're so unaccustomed to noticing the body's energy. We're sort of fastened onto thoughts and what's happening with our thoughts, and we miss the body's energy. And so, you know, once you begin to notice the body's energy, you can learn how to let it settle. And the more settled the body's energy is, the more settled your mind is. And it's just a much more tangible, direct way of going about that.
So what I'm hearing you say is that the body, almost listen to the body more than the mind.
Nothing wrong with it, but to recognize,
yeah,
in effect, you know, what we've done, and we've been taught to do this, Mark, like from the time we were kids, we were put in school, and the body's energy is going to get you into trouble if you don't suppress it and tame it and shut it down. And meanwhile, you're told to fill your head with ideas. So the energy of your being is separated from your thinking. So you actually come to believe that you can think more clearly if you shut down all that noise from the neck down and just concentrate on your head. And the fact is that all that energy of the body is just another form of thinking.
Uh-huh.
Every sensation is a form of thinking in the body, and we've separated our thinking from that so that we're thinking in a way that doesn't feel the body, doesn't feel the world around us, doesn't feel the breath. It's our thinking is pulled away from our being, and it's sort of running its own show. And when you soften into that, so you think with the whole of your being, your thinking acquires a clarity and an ease that just can't be had when it's this part of your intelligence, this little secluded portion running rampant in the head.
So when you do your workshops, so the way you share your wisdom is in your workshops and then in your book, Radical Wholeness.
Yeah, exactly.
And you have another book too. What was the name of the first one?
Yeah, my first book was New Self, New World.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and both books have practices in them. You know, with until you put something into practice, it can so easily remain just an idea.
Uh-huh. So they're actual practices that people can learn by reading your books?
Yeah, in both books, yeah.
Uh-huh. And can you share two or three of them?
Well, I'd be happy to. I could explain one of them. And maybe, do you want me to talk you through one that'll take a couple of minutes?
Sure.
Or just explain it?
You could talk me through it.
Okay. So if you recognize that the body's energy and the mind are pretty closely affiliated, then you can begin to turn your attention to the body's energy and notice the emotions that show up in the body's energy, the way the breath shows up in it. There may be, you know, an energy of thinking that shows up in it, energy of organs and muscles. So you can just gently turn your attention to that whole field of energy, the way you might, I don't know, open your eyes on a star field at night, and you just notice the energy in your legs and your torso and your head, and you just feel the energy of your being. And then you can choose to gently allow that energy to begin to melt inside the body. And you can feel it like a cascade begin to melt and trickle down through the body the way water trickles down through pebbles. You can actually feel that in your legs. You can feel that energy melting and beginning to trickle down. You can feel it in the body, in the head, melting and trickling down. So there's this descending cascade through the body, and you feel it arrive on the soles of your feet, and it pools inside your feet, and it begins to grow. It rises inside your legs like a tide, and still that energy is being noticed, gently allowed to melt and trickle down inside the body, and it just descends, and those pools of fluid energy rise up inside the legs and up eventually to the top of the pelvic bowl. So you've got this spaciousness in the body above the pelvic bowl and this settled fluid energy in the pelvic bowl and the legs. And you can actually feel that energy come to rest on the soles of your feet. You can feel it join the earth. You can feel it join the present. And there's that grounded, settled energy below and that availability above, where there's room for all the world to be felt, to be understood in a way that doesn't necessarily require language. And it's a very simple practice, but you can do it, like all my practices, you can do it anytime. You can do it washing dishes. You can do it walking down the street or chatting to a neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And
when you put your energy into, you know, into noticing what your body's like, in a way you're still using your mind to do that, though.
Yeah, but your mind, like I understand mind to be a sort of holistic phenomenon, not just the brain, but the mind includes the intelligence of the body.
Okay.
And the intelligence of the body, we're such a headist culture, we're such a top-down, head-in-charge culture that for years we've resisted the notion that the body is anything other than a sort of biological machine, and it hums with intelligence. And there are differences between the intelligence of the head and the intelligence of the body, and they need each other. It's not that either one is dispensable, but the intelligence of the head understands analysis. It pulls things to pieces. It organizes the world by exclusion. So it categorizes by excluding, like, an orange from the category of vegetables, and it abstracts by excluding the whole context within which some phenomenon is embedded. And the intelligence in the body is inclusive. It feels the present. It feels the world in its wholeness. And both of those are necessary, but we've gone so far in the direction of the head being in charge that as a culture we've almost become blind to wholeness. So we understand wholeness in exclusive terms. So we think that you can be whole in body, mind, and spirit, as though wholeness were a matter of allowing these three parts of the self to flourish and come into harmony, and wholeness is the result. But that idea of wholeness completely interrupts our seamless existence with the present. You know, with every breath, I'm drawing into my body exhalations of forests, and that's becoming me. It's living in my cells and keeping them alive, even as I breathe out carbon dioxide as a gift in exchange. So there's this continuous exchange with the world, and what we do is we separate ourselves from that, we desensitize ourselves to it, and we do so in a way so the world can't get to us, so it can't hurt us, so we feel safe. But really, it's a contraction into what ultimately becomes a prison, and you feel your life confined and congested and harried. And when that happens, it's a sign that you've separated from the present, which is always in harmony. It's always at rest. It's always moving on. And we lose that connection.
So if people want to find out more about your work, you want to tell the audience out there how they can find out about what you do, how they can get your book and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, I'd be delighted to, Mark. Thanks. There's the easiest access to it is on my website, which is philipshepherd.com. And I should spell it because there are about 18 ways of spelling it, but it's Philip with one L, and Shepherd is S-H-E-P-H-E-R-D, philipshepherd.com. And, all my upcoming workshops are listed there, and there's nothing quite like joining a workshop to feel the changes that are possible once you do drop down into the body's intelligence. But even there, I've got on my website, I've got 8 audio exercises that I recorded in a sound studio, and you can get one of them for free to have a listen. But they're mm-hmm. all very different ways of finding, building the bridge back between that intelligence in the head and the intelligence in the body.
Well, that's a nice gesture on your part for those out there that want to get a sample of Philip's work. Is there, what I was thinking about, is there like a profile of the kind of person that comes to your workshops?
That's a good question.
You notice a pattern in the people that come, or are there more men than women? Is there a demographic, an age group, or have you noticed that? I know you've been doing this for a while, and I noticed I looked at your website. You're going to be in Ireland.
Yeah, I'm so looking forward to that. I love going to Ireland. I've got a teacher's training in Ireland, so I'm training a group of 14 people who are learning how to teach my work so they can share it with others. So I'm doing that, and I've got a weekend workshop there, and then a weekend workshop in Basel, Switzerland, which I'm really looking forward to.
Well, little traveling, huh?
Yeah, and I just got back from Australia and New Zealand, which was phenomenal. Wow. 7 weeks there teaching workshops and a retreat.
So have you back to my question, have you noticed are there more women than men or age or life situation? Have you noticed?
Yeah.
I mean, have you noticed anything like that?
I've noticed a few things. So the last workshop I taught, there were more men than women, but that was maybe the first time that's happened. In general, there are more women than men. Why
do you think that is?
Oh, can I be completely frank?
I think... You're only on the internet.
That's right. Who's
going to
know?
You're only on the internet. Why not be frank, right?
I think men have been born into the status quo, and the status quo flatters them and cajoles them, and women are asking questions in a way that men aren't. They're, you know, why rock the boat? Because it's benefiting them. Meanwhile, the boat's full of holes and it's sinking. But I think, you know, women feel those questions so deeply. They feel the injustices, the need for change, more personally, more deeply perhaps than some men do. So that's really how I understand it. Yeah.
So they're more open, more curious generally.
More curious about the questions that the workshop is really delving into. Yeah. Men are probably more curious about internal combustion engines and things like that.
Right.
You know, fair. And we need them. So there you go. But those questions about
so that's gender. What about age? Did you notice any patterns on age?
Yeah, just not many teenagers, but people from their 20s well into their 80s. So there's not a, you know, there's a really nice diversity in that regard.
So for
and
anybody of any age. And what about career? Any types of careers you notice? Any professional, non-professionals, artists, corporate type?
Yeah. I'd say maybe fewer corporate types, but I mean, you know, quite a few, but not, you know, more people who've been into body work or yoga, people who are into the arts. You know, there's a violin teacher who's doing the teacher's training in Ireland. It's lovely.
Mm-hmm.
There are massage therapists and anyone, you know, anyone who's begun to suspect that the way of life we've been sort of encouraged into isn't the whole story. And that's really what my workshop is about looking at choices that are there that we don't know how to exercise, that we're not even aware of, and that all those possibilities, once you've explored them, once you've experienced a new possibility, that's the leverage, the fertile ground for change.
So it's really for people that are open to change.
I think that probably sums it up. Open for it, or even you could say hungry for it.
Because I found, you know, in my path and the work I do, that some people are just more open. They're open to.
Yeah.
They're curious. They want to learn new things, And some people that want to do that, it's I know for myself, it's been a lifelong journey to where I'm always curious about new things and trying new things and experiencing them, and growth is just constant. It's just something that where other people won't change at all unless they're hit over the head, and then then they go, oh, well, I guess that's a wake up call, and they're feeling pain, and then they'll do anything to alleviate the pain, and that gets them going. That gets them looking for something outside themselves.
Yeah, and boy, life has a way of issuing those wake up calls.
It does.
The more reluctant they are, there is the more vibrant the wake up call.
It's pretty amazing.
So
what inspires you right now?
My daughters inspire me.
Huh?
I mean, my daughters are in their early 20s, and there's something happening in that generation where they don't buy into the tired story of what life is about that so many are hanging on to, and they're reinventing a new way of being. And I find that immensely inspiring, not just in my daughters, but in that generation that just...
Right,
the
millennials, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Who takes so much abuse.
Uh-huh.
And I think the abuse, at times it may be founded, but in general I think it arises from a real misunderstanding of where their values are.
Uh-huh.
And they do have values.
But
really.
Don't you think also that people in that age, I know in my generation, we really questioned a lot of things. We were questioners and challenged.
You know what the...
Challenged the status quo.
Yeah, the 60s was the first time, and I have a feeling we're of a similar age, but the 60s was the first time in human history that children turned to their parents and said, what you're doing is wrong. And it was an incredibly exciting era. It just unleashed all kinds of energy and possibility and new ways of thinking. And then, it's like it fizzled out. It didn't have the means of reinventing our story of what it means to be human. It certainly had an effect, and began changes that we're still riding out today. But the promise of the 60s to me is what's needed now more than anything. And I think we do have a whole new understanding because we've been nourished by so many cultures in other ways of understanding what it means to be human, and especially Aboriginal cultures are opening our eyes to different relationship with the tree outside your window, with the sky, with the water and the earth. I feel hopeful that promise, that energy, will have a renewal and finally fulfill its promise.
What would be the conversation you would encourage today? You talked about the conversation of the 60s generation that they had with their parents. What would be the conversation you would encourage today? Not even a conversation, a dialogue for youth to have with their parents. There's got to be a short answer because we're running out of time, but I'm just curious.
Okay, I'll make it as short as I can. The primary relationship in our lives is our relationship with the body. And as long as we have a top-down relationship with the body, we will be imposing a top-down relationship everywhere else, on nature, on our careers, on our decisions. And to reconcile with the body's energy is to also come into harmony with the mindfulness of the present, the mindfulness of the trees and the sky and the earth, and work hand in hand with them. And that can't happen until we undo the top-down relationship and come into balance within ourselves.
Well, I think that's a wrap. So thank you very much, Philip Shepherd, for being the guest on the Inspire Possibility Show and for your commitment to the wisdom of the body and the embodiment and all that you're doing, and for choosing that life path and making that decision and inspiring other people to look deeper. And for all of you out there, you know, every week we have other amazing people to share their wisdom with us. And until next week, journey on.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine.